This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Stealth by Karen Miller. Read for you by Jeff Gerner. Chapter 1. As far as Ahsoka Tano was concerned, the only thing worse than being up to her armpits in battle droids was waiting to find out just how long it would be before she was up to her armpits in battle droids. She hated waiting. But it seemed that war was all about waiting, at least when it wasn't about staring death in the face.
"But I'm not scared. I'm not scared. I'm not scared. I'm not..."
With Resolute out of rotation for a refit, she stood on the bridge of Indomitable, one of the next generation of cruisers to come out of the Alantine 6 shipyards. Cruisers that were faster and more responsive than ever before, thanks to her master's, what did the chief shipwright called it? Oh yes, tinkering. Thanks to Anakin's tinkering, the new vessels were a definite cut above the First Republic cruisers that had rolled out of production for service in this war against Dooku and his separatist alliance. The differences had been noted and were talked about whenever and wherever military types crossed paths. In battle, in briefings, sharing some chit-chat and a drink in this mess or that one, or even the occasional civilian bar. The Jedi who fought on the front lines were talking about them too. Everyone who relied on the massive Republic warships knew that their odds of survival had increased because Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker liked to muck about with machines when he wasn't busy being the scourge of the Separatists. Anakin. That's how she thought of him now. After arduous months of fighting by his side, learning from him, saving him, and being saved by him. But she never called him that to his face. She couldn't. The idea of saying Anakin felt more disrespectful than a cheeky nickname. Sky Guy was familiar, but it wasn't intimate. First names were intimate. They implied equality. But she and her master weren't equals. She suspected they never would be. She was pretty sure that no matter how hard she trained, how hard she tried, even after she'd passed the trials and been made a Jedi Knight, she would never come close to matching him as a Jedi.
"How can I? He's the chosen one. He can do things that aren't meant to be possible."
She snuck a sideways look at him, standing on the far side of Indomitable's bridge in hushed conversation with Master Kenobi and Admiral Yularen. Letting down her habitual guard the tiniest bit, she prepared to stretch out her senses, to feel what he was feeling behind his carefully constructed mask. It wasn't prying. She didn't pry. As a Padawan, it was her job, no, her duty, to make sure her master was well, to be constantly attuned to his mood so she could anticipate his needs and more perfectly serve him. Since joining Anakin on Christophsis, she'd lost count of the times that keeping a close eye on him had made the difference between success and failure, life and death. Young she might be, and still in training, but she could do that. She was good at that. Besides, once assigned to this man, she'd made her own private and personal vow quite apart from the public oaths she'd sworn in the Jedi Temple.
"I will not be the Padawan who gets the Chosen One killed."
Around her, the bridge crew conducted its military business with brisk efficiency. No chatter since the Admiral was present. When Yularen was elsewhere, his officers sometimes indulged in a little gossip, a few jokes, a smattering of idle wartime speculation. Nothing detrimental to discipline, nothing untoward. Just harmless camaraderie to help while away the tedium of days like this one, when battle was yet to be joined, and the void beyond the trans-peristeel viewports remained empty of enemy ships and impending slaughter. She could hear, humming in the background, all the baffling hardware that made these warships possible. Sensor sweeps and multiphasic duo-diode relays and cognizant crystal interfaces and quasi-sentient droid links and stuff. so much stuff, and it made no sense to her. The slippery info laneways of computers she could work with. But she didn't possess any kind of knack for nuts and bolts and circuits machinery. Constructing her own lightsaber had nearly given her a nosebleed. Anakin, on the other hand... machinery was meat and drink to Anakin. He loved it. But she was letting herself become distracted, so she pushed those thoughts aside. Her immediate task was to ascertain what Anakin was feeling. That way, she'd have a better idea of what to expect from him when the news they were waiting for at last came through. And an idea of how best to deal with him once it did. Dealing with her master's sometimes overpowering emotions was becoming more and more a part of her duties. And as the war dragged on and their losses piled up, that job wasn't getting any easier.
He feels too much, too keenly. Maybe that's what happens when you've got the highest midichlorian count in Jedi history. Maybe that's the trade-off. You feel everything, so you're brilliant. You feel everything, and it hurts.
Not that his emotions got in the way. At least, he didn't think they did. And to be honest, she didn't either. At least, not as often as some people thought. Like Master Kenobi, for example, who chided his former Padawan for taking crazy risks, for pushing himself too hard, for letting things matter too much and losing his carefully measured Jedi distance. She didn't always disagree, and sometimes, when Anakin had given her a really bad fright or when his mood became difficult, she wished she could chide him too. But as a Padawan, she had to find another way to let her master know he'd gone too far. So she sassed him, or invented nicknames that were guaranteed to get under his skin. Sometimes she even deliberately flouted his wishes. Anything to break him free of sorrow or frustration or some bleak memory he refused to share. Anything to let him know, hey, what you did then? That was stupid. But mostly, she kept her fears for him to herself because all his bright and burning passion for justice, his reckless courage, his hunger for victory, and his refusal to accept defeat, they were what made him Anakin. He wouldn't be Anakin without his feelings. She knew that. She accepted that. No matter what temple teachings said about the Jedi and their emotions.
And even though he scolds, I think Master Kenobi accepts it too. He only scolds because he cares.
So, what was her brilliant, sometimes volatile master feeling now? Eyes drifted half-closed. Ahsoka breathed out a soft sigh and let her growing Jedi awareness touch lightly upon him.
Impatience. Concern. Relief. Loneliness. Weariness. And grief not yet healed.
Such a muddle of emotions, such a weight on his shoulders. Months of brutal battle had left her drained and nearly numb, but it was worse for Anakin. He was a Jedi general with countless lives entrusted to his care, and every life damaged or lost he counted as a personal failure. For other people, he found forgiveness. For himself, there was none. For himself, there was only anger at not meeting his own exacting standards. Feeling helpless, she chewed at her lip. She didn't know what she could do to make anything better for him. She couldn't heal his grief for the clones who'd fallen under his command or the civilians he'd been unable to save. She couldn't make him less tired or order him home to Coruscant where his mood always lightened. She couldn't promise the war would end soon with the Republic victorious. At least he had Master Kenobi's company for a little while. She was sure that accounted for his relief. They cheered each other up, those two. No matter how dire the straits, Anakin and Master Kenobi always managed to find a joke, a laugh, some way to ease the tension and pressure of the moment. Between the two men lay absolute trust, absolute faith. Now they were equals. On the outside, looking in, she couldn't help feeling a little forlorn.
Will he ever feel that way about me? Will he ever believe in me the way he believes in Obi-Wan?
She opened her eyes to find Anakin looking at her. Though she'd tried so hard to be discreet, still he'd felt her sensing of him. She held her breath, expecting a reprimand. Anakin hated when she did this. But no reprimand came. Instead, her master raised a tolerantly amused eyebrow at her, and in his eyes was a kind of tired appreciation. She felt herself shrug, a tiny twitch of one shoulder, and curved her lips into a small, rueful, I can't help it, smile. He took a breath. He was going to say something, but then his head lifted. So did Master Kenobi's. A few moments later, she felt it too. A sharp, almost painful tingle of awareness. Something was coming. And a few moments after that, the comm officer straightened in her chair and pressed a finger to the transceiver plugged into her ear. Sir? Admiral Ularin, lean and predatory as ever, and alerted already by the Jedi on either side of him, practically leapt for the comm station. Lieutenant Avery? The slight blonde officer danced her fingers over the ship's comm panel, frowning, then gave a pleased nod.
Sir, I have an incoming message from the Jedi Council Priority Alpha.
Recorded or real time?
The lieutenant checked.
Recorded, sir. Sent by triple-coded multiple-routed short burst. Priority Alpha.
Skin prickling, senses jittering, Ahsoka held her breath. This was it. This was what they'd been waiting for as they dangled idly out here for hours in the middle of nowhere. An empty stretch of space on the border between the expansion region and the galactic mid-rim, parsecs away from anywhere remotely civilized.
This is it.
Ularin's nod was swift and grim.
Very good, Lieutenant. Master Kenobi?
I think we'll take this one in the battle operations room, Admiral, Master Kenobi said. His voice was mild, completely unperturbed, as though an alpha transmission from the Council came along once or twice a day, instead of only as a last resort emergency. Ahsoka eyed him with unbecoming envy.
One of these years, I'm going to be as untwitchy as him. Masters?
Yes, Padawan, we means you, said Anakin. So what are you waiting for? She nearly said,
An invitation.
The smart remark was awfully tempting. He'd practically asked for it. But she held her tongue because she was no longer that uncertain, mouthy Padawan who'd met her new master in the midst of battle on Christophsis. She'd changed. Grown. Smart remarks at a time like this weren't funny. They were disruptive and unhelpful, and they made her mentor look bad. She'd learned that lesson from clone Captain Rex.
Lieutenant, said Admiral Ularin, sounding almost as calm as Master Kenobi. Calm the captains of Pioneer and Coruscant Sky. Stand by for orders. Battle alert.
Yes, Admiral, said the comm officer. Color washed into her space-white face. All around the bridge, the crew snapped to stricter attention. The scrubbed air tightened with a palpable anticipation. Ularin flicked a tight smile at Anakin and Master Kenobi.
Lead the way, gentlemen.
With an effort, Ahsoka smoothed her expression into uncaring blandness, hating that Anakin and Master Kenobi could sense her true feelings. As her Jedi superiors and the Admiral swept past her, she fell into step behind them, lightsaber bouncing lightly against her hip. Her mouth was dry. How annoying. She'd seen plenty of action since the start of the war. Surely she should be bored by this now, but no. Her body betrayed her with a dry mouth and a racing heart, and sweat slicking the skin between her shoulder blades.
Soon we'll be fighting, and if I make a mistake, I'll get Anakin killed.
Ahsoka, said Anakin, not even looking over his shoulder. How many times do I have to tell you our thoughts create our reality? Cut it out. He always knew.
Sorry, Master.
It wasn't far from the bridge to the battle operations room, just one short corridor and a single flight of stairs. As soon as they were ranged around the broad central holodisplay table, Admiral Ularin toggled his comm to the bridge.
Patch it through, Lieutenant.
The holo imagers blinked on, bright blue-white light against the battle room's muted illumination. The air above the holodisplay shivered, mirage-like, and then an image flickered, partially disintegrated, flickered again, and finally coalesced into a recognizable form. Master Yoda.
Confirmation we have, Master Kenobi, of the initial report. Misled the Special Operations Brigade was not. A target have Dooku and Grievous made of Kothless and its Spinet facility. In Republic hands, must they remain, for compromise the Midrim cannot be. Once the strength of the enemy you have determined, call for reinforcements you can if defeating Grievous without them is not possible. But contact the Council in real time, do not until Kothless you have reached. Stealth and secrecy are our most potent weapons. Use them wisely, May the Force be with you.
Master Yoda's image winked out. Well, said Master Kenobi, breaking the tense silence, this is going to be interesting. Anakin frowned. What reinforcements? Our people are scattered from one side of the Republic to the other. Korix Moff is on patrol near Faleen, is she not? That's the closest. One ship? Anakin shook his head. Obi-Wan. It's better than nothing, Anakin. Anakin didn't think so, if the look on his face was anything to go by. He scowled at Master Kenobi, and Master Kenobi stared back, his expression unreadable. I'm sorry, but Master Yoda's message is too cryptic for my tastes, said Admiral Yularen. One narrow finger stroked his mustache, a sure sign he was uneasy. Bitter experience has taught us we can't attack Grievous with anything less than overwhelming force. Not if we wish to finish him once and for all, and avoid a catastrophic level of loss on our side. And in an ideal galaxy, we would have that overwhelming force at our disposal, said Master Kenobi, arms decisively folded. Alas, Admiral, this galaxy of ours is far from ideal, and cryptic or not, we have our orders. Yoda's right. We must keep Kothless out of Separatist hands. I know that, said Yularen curtly, but the notion we can't call for support until we're in the thick of the fight? We all know that'll likely be too late. True, said Anakin, stirring out of somber thought. But we'll have to live with it. In fact, he shot the Admiral a dark look. I think we'll have to think twice about calling for help at all, because if someone does come to our aid, it means somewhere else gets left undefended. Yularen bristled. What? You want me to risk this battle group three cruisers against... I beat him with three cruisers last time, said Anakin, deceptively mild. I know, Yularen retorted, and that would be my point, General Skywalker. Grievous isn't stupid. He learns from his mistakes. He's going to make sure he has more than enough firepower to easily take us down. I'm not prepared to risk. I'm sorry, Admiral, said Master Kenobi, still calm, but I'm afraid you might have to. Anakin's made a good point. What we'd prefer hardly factors into this. We simply don't have spare battle groups idling about. Abandoning his mustache, Yularen drummed his fingers on the edge of the hollow display table, angrily resentful of the cold, hard facts. I know, I'm just... He sighed. I don't like it, that's all I'm saying. We should calm Grievous, then, said Anakin, his eyes glittering in the dull light. Let him know his plans are inconvenient. Ask him to make sure he only sends in a couple of... Anakin, said Master Kenobi quietly. Sorry, said Anakin, and made a visible effort to relax his gloved prosthetic hand. I'm a bit... on edge. Ahsoka looked at him from under lowered lashes, feeling his agitation as a hot breeze blowing over her skin. No kidding. So, her master added, I guess now we head for Kothless. Without further delay, said Master Kenobi. Admiral? Yularen nodded, his face grave, resigned now to what had to be done, no matter how hard he found it. Agreed. And with any luck, we'll beat Grievous to the punch and be waiting for him. Even the smallest advantage might make the difference for us. He toggled the comm button again. Lieutenant Avery, we have a mission. While Yularen relayed battle group orders with staccato speed, Master Kenobi drew Anakin aside with a glance. I suggest we play to our strengths on this one, Anakin, he said, his voice low. If we do reach Kothless and find that Grievous has stolen a march on us, it's likely we'll be looking at both air and ground assaults. Should that prove to be the case, I suggest you lead the fighter squadrons, and I'll take care of the ground assault with Captain Rex and our clone trooper companies. Anakin almost had his edginess under control. Just a hint of disquiet churned in him now, like water on the brink of boiling. And if we've stolen a march on him? In that case, said Master Kenobi, his expression fastidious with distaste, I shall join you in leading the fighters against Grievous's pilots. Ahsoka watched them exchange quick smiles, then cleared her throat.
Masters? What about me?
They stared at her, startled, as though for a moment they'd forgotten she existed. In the silence, she heard, felt, the shift in the warship's sublight drives as they broke their stationary position, getting ready for the hyperjump to Kothless. Washing in its wake, the subliminal buzz through the Force as every sentient being on all three cruisers accepted the reality of imminent battle, possible death. It was a song sung without words in a minor key, haunting, sorrowful, shot through with stark courage. You, Ahsoka? Said Anakin, blinking himself free of the same thing she was feeling. If it comes to a ground assault, you'll fight with Obi-Wan and Rex, and if it doesn't, you'll stay here on Indomitable.
Stay behind? While he threw himself heedless into danger? But...
Anakin's eyes narrowed dangerously. Don't argue.
Not fair, not fair,
she raged in silence.
Ahsoka,
Anakin gentled his tone. This isn't about your competence.
I know what you can do, but we have plenty of pilots. Your skills will be better utilized here.
Master Skywalker's right, said Admiral Yularen. Finished giving his orders, he was unabashedly listening in. If you do remain aboard ship, there'll be a tactical targeting array with your name on it.
He unbent far enough to offer her a small, not unsympathetic smile.
I've yet to meet a Jedi who couldn't outsense our best sensors.
But it's more likely you'll be needed on the ground, added Master Kenobi, with me. I do hope the prospect's not unbearable, Padawan. He was being sarcastic. She felt her cheeks burn. Anakin was watching her closely. If she protested again, she'd disappoint him.
Not unbearable at all, Master Kenobi, she said, staring at the deck. Serving by your side is always an honor.
She risked glancing up.
It's only...
I know, said Master Kenobi more kindly.
You worry for Anakin's safety, but there's no need. And now the subject is closed.
He turned to Yularen. What's our estimated jump time to Kothless?
38 standard minutes, said the Admiral. I'm dropping us out of hyperspace just inside sensor range of their spynet. Close enough for us to contact them, and to sweep for SEP ships if we've beaten Grievous there.
Our own intelligence agents will have alerted the Kothless Bothans to the danger they're in, said Anakin, frowning again.
For all the good it'll do them. Without a standing army or space fleet of their own, they're ripe for plucking.
His gloved prosthetic hand clenched.
I should have seen this coming. I should have known Grievous wouldn't forgive or forget the insult of losing to me at Bothawe.
This is a rematch, and you know he's itching for the fight. If we lose Kothless to him, if he manages to breach the mid-rim...
Don't let your thoughts run ahead to disaster, Anakin, said Master Kenobi sharply. As you say, you defeated Grievous once. There's no reason to think you, we, can't defeat him again.
Anakin's chin lifted at the reprimand. Ahsoka, watching him, felt her breath hitch, felt the flash of fury sizzle through him. And then he relaxed, pulling a wry face.
Sorry, he said. You're right. I should know better.
38 minutes, said Master Kenobi, his eyes warm now. Give or take. Just enough time, I think, for a little pre-battle meditation. You're not the only one who's feeling a trifle on edge, my friend. I could do with some refocusing myself.
You?
Anakin's eyebrows shot up.
I find that hard to believe.
Master Kenobi rested his hand briefly on Anakin's shoulder.
Believe it, Anakin. You know how much I hate to fly.
I think you just say that, Anakin retorted, grinning. You couldn't be such a good pilot if you hated flying as much as you claim. Master Kenobi grimaced.
Trust me. If I'm a good pilot, it's out of a well-developed sense of self-preservation. As far as I'm concerned, Anakin, anyone who actually enjoys flying is in serious need of therapeutic counseling.
Anakin was struggling not to laugh.
If you're not careful, I'll tell Gold Squadron you said that.
So, are we going to naval gaze or aren't we?
Please excuse us, Admiral, said Master Kenobi, the amusement dying out of his face. And look for us on the bridge 10 minutes before the battle group drops out of hyperspace.
Admiral Yularen nodded.
Of course, General. In the meantime, I'll have the fighters and gunships prepped for flight.
Ahsoka, said Anakin as Master Kenobi headed for the battle room's closed hatch. Make yourself useful and give Rex the heads up, will you? Run through the pre-battle routine with him and his men. Half of Torrent Company's still a bit green. They'll settle with you there.
Under his careless confidence, she sensed a hint of that unhealed grief. The loss of Greenies Ver and Ince during the Jan Fathal mission, the loss of other Torrent Company clones since then. His pain was like a Kiplin burr burrowed deep in his flesh. Anakin had a bad habit of nursing those wounds, and no matter what she said, tactfully, no matter what Master Kenobi said without any tact at all, nothing made a difference. He hurt for them, and always would.
Yes, Master,
she said. She waited for him to leave so she could sprint to midships and let Rex know that, like as not, they'd soon be going into battle together, again.
So, what's the skinny, little un?
Rex asked as Ahsoka skidded into the mess hall.
Since we're on the move at last, have we got that clank of Grievous in our sights?
Sort of,
she said, dropping into a spare chair beside Checkers, one of Torrent Company's latest additions.
We've confirmed the preliminary intel. He's definitely after Kothless. Now it's a race to see who gets there first.
Rex's perfect teeth bared in a feral smile.
Ah, then it's game on.
The crowded barracks mess hall erupted into muttering and exclamation. Force-sensing from habit, Ahsoka tasted the clone's swirling emotions. A little caution, a lot of excitement. At first, she'd thought the Republic's clone soldiers welcomed battle because they had no choice, because they'd been genetically programmed to fight and not question that duty. But while that was an uncomfortable truth, once she found herself wrestling with more and more as the war dragged on, it was also true that most of the clones she knew enjoyed combat. And not because some Kaminoan scientist had tweaked a test tube and made sure they would. No, they enjoyed winning, outsmarting the enemy, liberating citizens who were being used as pawns by Count Dooku and Newt Gunray and the other shadowy leaders of the Separatist Alliance. Was it so hard to believe, really? Saving the innocent? That did feel good. Besting or surviving lethal foes like a Sage Ventress, like Grievous? That felt good too. She knew Anakin and Master Kenobi deplored this war, deplored the senseless loss of life, the suffering, but she wasn't blind. She'd seen in their faces the exhilaration that came with victory. It was no less real than their grief when lives were lost. She'd felt it too. She'd celebrated when vicious, venal beings were defeated.
It's so complicated. If war is wrong, how come we can find moments of pleasure and triumph in it? Isn't there something twisted in that?
Disturbed by the thought, she heard herself whimper in her throat just a little bit, and that alarmed her so much she crushed the notion savagely.
Little fool.
It was exactly the wrong thing to be thinking when they were racing through hyperspace to confront that monster Grievous and save the helpless people of Kothless from Separatist enslavement, or worse.
Ahsoka Tano, you know better.
Rex was deep in conversation with Sergeant Korik, so she turned to Checkers. He might be a newcomer to Torrent Company, but he wasn't a greeny clone. The deep scarring on his right cheek attested to previous combat experience, as did that certain glint in his eye. The same glint she sometimes saw in Rex and Korik and any number of Torrent Company's men. It set them apart as soldiers who'd been fought to a standstill, who stared down death and survived. Checkers felt her gaze on him and looked up.
Ma'am?
She blinked.
Oh, I'm not a ma'am.
What then? Said Checkers with a wry half-smile. Something tells me I won't get away with little un.
You can call me Ahsoka, she said, charmed. Everyone else does.
Ahsoka it is, then, he replied. Togruta, aren't you?
That's right. Checkers, can I ask how you got here? I mean, how did you get assigned to Torrent Company?
Checkers flicked a glance at his fellow clones talking among themselves in the mess hall, pursed his lips for a moment, then seemed to reach a decision. His face relaxed and his shoulders settled. I requested the transfer. Used to be in Laser Company under General Fisto.
Oh, is that when you were wounded?
She asked, her voice small.
In the Kessel encounter?
His fingers came up, touching lightly to the bubbled scarring under his eye. That's right.
I knew there was only one clone survivor, but I didn't realize that was you.
He shrugged. No reason you should. You weren't here when I joined Torrent, and there's no point talking about it. Can't undo what happened.
But there's still a Laser Company, isn't there? She said, frowning. I thought Master Fisto...
There is, said Checkers with another shrug. But I wanted a clean break. After they got through patching me up at the clone med facility, they offered me a posting of my choice.
And you chose Torrent Company?
Charmed all over again, she couldn't help smiling, even though his terse story covered a chasm of pain and loss.
Don't get me wrong, I'm glad, but why?
Not because I blame General Fisto, Checkers said quickly. Don't think that, Ahsoka. His dark-eyed gaze shifted and came to rest on Rex, still talking logistics with Sergeant Korak. The truth is, I want to survive this war. That means serving under the best officer I can find. Checkers was keeping his voice down, but Rex still heard that last comment. Startled, he broke off whatever he was saying to Korak and shifted in his chair. Seeing and feeling his barely muffled astonishment, Ahsoka grinned. It wasn't easy to rattle Rex, and she did find it comforting to know he could be rattled, at least when they weren't on the front lines facing death.
"Stay the chatter," he snapped. "We're on the chrono."
Silence claimed the mess hall, abrupt as a cut comlink. Ahsoka winced at the suddenly ratcheted tension buzzing through the force like a vibroblade. It made her teeth ache and her vision blur.
"Ahsoka," Rex added, skewering her with his most direct, no-nonsense stare. "What's our ETA at Kothless?"
She checked her almost infallible Jedi time sense.
23 minutes, Captain.
"Ground assault's confirmed?"
"Not confirmed, but highly possible. If the Seps have beaten us there and started an invasion of Kothless, General Kenobi will handle the counteroffensive while my master and Shadow Company clear the skies."
Rex nodded.
"That means you're with us?" "Good."
His gaze swept the hall.
"Then we need to gear up. Torrent Company, get to work."
Within a heartbeat, the mood changed again. Lingering anxiety and uncertainty disappeared in a wave of purposeful action as Rex's men began the familiar countdown to combat. Because she couldn't help with that, because she couldn't do anything now but wait, Ahsoka got out of the way. She perched herself in a corner and tried, like Anakin, to calm herself with meditation, which was fine, mostly, except one thought kept intruding over and over.
"May the Force be with us, and please, please don't let my actions get any of these clones killed."
Chapter 2.
"It's no good, Admiral," said Lieutenant Avery, flushed with dismay. "I'm sorry. I don't know how they're doing it, but the Seps have every comm channel jammed, even our internal network. We're silent across the board."
Yularen glared at her.
"That's unacceptable, Lieutenant. Find the problem and fix it."
"Sir..."
The comm officer's face lost its hectic color.
"Yes, sir. I'll do my best."
As Yularen swallowed an unprofessional response, Anakin looked to Obi-Wan. His former master raised an eyebrow, resigned.
"This time the advantage goes to the enemy," he murmured. "It's going to get ugly, I fear."
Beyond the bridge's main viewport, Grievous's new flagship and its 4 satellite cruisers hung low and threatening above the Bothan colony world of Kothless. 2 of the planet's 3 small moons were completely obscured by Grievous's fleet, and the void of space lit up at haphazard intervals as the Separatist General's invasion troops blasted a path through the thin belt of asteroids, ringing their intended target, bullying their blundering, unopposed way toward the planet's undefended surface. Joining his Jedi colleagues, Yularen blew out a furious breath.
"We've never lost communications like this before. They've upgraded their countermeasures. How in the 9 hells are they getting their intel?"
"That's an excellent question, Admiral," said Obi-Wan.
And we need to find the answer just as soon as we've dealt with General Grievous.
Obviously, but how can we do that if we can't talk to one another? Yularen demanded. And if it turns out we're outgunned and we're not able to send for reinforcements, how can we possibly...
Sir, said Lieutenant Avery, crawling out from under her comm console, her light hair darkened with sweat and grime. Sir, I think it's a virus.
Yularen swung around. How serious?
With a grunt and a swipe of her sleeve across her face, Avery scrambled to her feet. It's corrupted the comm software, Admiral. As far as I can tell, we've got ship-to-ship type beam, and most likely the clone troops helmet type beam will work too. Aside from that, she shrugged. We've been gagged, and the system's diagnostic can't recognize the virus coding. I can tell you it's complex and multi-stranded, 3 quadruple helixes at least, self-replicating on a random cycle and specifically targeted to our systems.
For a moment, Anakin thought Yularen was going to burst a blood vessel. And it's on my ship? He turned every muscle rigid. General Skywalker!
Admiral, each new cruiser tested clean before it left Alantine 6, Anakin said.
And none of my modifications could have introduced a virus. In fact, I designed blind alley redundancies to make sure something like this couldn't happen.
He glanced at Obi-Wan. And if they've failed, that means...
Sabotage, said Obi-Wan, his eyes bleak. The Seps must have infiltrated our shipyards.
Silence followed as they digested that unpalatable fact.
Avery, can you fix this? Said Yularen. I can't send men into harm's way without communication.
Seated again at her console, Avery looked up from punching in a swift succession of commands.
Admiral, I'm initiating a system-wide purge, but it'll take time, and I don't know how effective it'll be. I've never seen a virus like this. I'm almost positive it was remotely activated, probably from Grievous's command ship as soon as we jumped into range. Whoever designed it, they're a genius. For all I know...
Breaking off as her console beeped and flashed, she adjusted her earpiece, listened for a moment, then turned back to them.
Type beams from Pioneer and Coruscant Sky. They report the same problem, Admiral. Battle group comms are down.
Is there nothing you can do, Lieutenant? Said Obi-Wan. No other solution but trusting this purge?
Avery dragged her fingers through her hair.
I don't think so, General. I don't...
What? Said Yularen, stepping closer to his officer. For all his formidable self-discipline, a note of hope sounded in his voice. I know that look, Lieutenant.
She flicked him a frowning glance. Anakin, focusing all his senses on her, felt trepidation and a faint buzz of cautious optimism.
Sir, I did my academy dissertation on pre-praxis crystal bio-anode circuitry,
the lieutenant said.
The technology's years out of date. It's practically ancient history, but the theories still sound.
If it's ancient history, how can it help us? Yularen demanded. I need solutions, Lieutenant, not...
This might be a solution, Admiral, she said, meeting his hot gaze unflinching. For all the upgrades and improvements we've got around here, I'm pretty sure we've still got some of that circuitry on board, in the Waste Corps' tertiary adjunct conduits. They're another kind of triple redundancy. Pre-praxis bioanodes used to have comm applications. If I can strip them out and rig them into the comm console, I think I can punch a signal through subspace strong enough to reach Coruscant.
Yularen stared at her. You think?
Sir, said Avery, the remaining color draining from her cheeks. I know.
You're saying you can restore communication.
A muscle leapt along Avery's narrow jaw.
I'm saying we've got a better than even shot at it, yes, sir.
How long, Lieutenant?
To rig Indomitable? An hour, give or take?
Then another 2 hours for Pioneer and Coruscant Sky?
Yularen shook his head, frustrated.
That's 3 hours neither we nor Kothless have to spare. Have you looked through the viewport? Grievous's forces are invading as we speak.
Lieutenant, said Obi-Wan mildly, as though they weren't facing an utter disaster.
Can you type beam detailed instructions for the comm officers on our other 2 ships? If all 3 of you work simultaneously, your plan might still succeed in time to do us some good.
Avery snapped out of her almost imperceptible slump.
Yes, General Kenobi, I can do that.
Then get on to it, said Yularen. Every minute wasted means more lost lives.
Wait,
said Anakin, abruptly unsettled.
I have a bad feeling.
What about our fighters and the Lardis?
They should be unaffected, General, said the lieutenant. They're not linked into our comm systems.
He looked at Obi-Wan.
No, but if Grievous can remotely activate a computer virus...
Then he might have the power to jam our ship comms, said Obi-Wan. There was unease in him now, too, the bad feeling shared. Despite our anti-jamming precautions, I suggest we find out before we launch an attack.
Leaving dourly silent Yularen and frantically working Lieutenant Avery, Obi-Wan and Anakin made their way to Indomitable's flight deck. The hangar's deckhands, on standby now that they'd prepped the fighters, watched them with wide eyes. Gold Squadron's pilots were in their barracks, mentally preparing for action.
Don't disturb them, said Obi-Wan as he swung himself into his own fighter's cockpit. If it is bad news, best they're spared hearing it for as long as possible. And it was bad news.
Sickened, Anakin stared at his ether sprite's unresponsive comm panel. Then he looked over at Obi-Wan, whose expressionless face said it all.
So, Grievous isn't taking any chances?
Obi-Wan nodded.
Apparently not. Computer viruses and broadband jamming equipment? The Barb's gone and got himself some serious upgrades. Wonder how long we've got before he can take out our tight beam as well.
If he's jamming the fighters, it's a good bet he's taken out the gunships, too.
Another nod. A very good bet.
Stang.
R2, can you unjam us?
Already locked into his wing position, R2-D2 emitted a dismal whistle.
Anakin slammed his fist against the open cockpit's frame.
Great.
Come on, said Obi-Wan, all emotion ruthlessly repressed. Yularen's waiting.
The Admiral took one look at them as they returned to the bridge and spat a soft curse.
Then that's it.
Not at all, said Obi-Wan, eyebrows lifting. We can't afford to wait until communications are restored. Kothless needs us now. We go in.
You mean fight blind? Said Anakin, disbelieving. And deaf? Obi-Wan!
I grant you it's not an ideal way to conduct a war, said Obi-Wan, the merest glimmer of bleak humor in his eyes. But I don't see another choice. Do you?
Stang.
He didn't. Grievous was delivering mayhem and slaughter while they stood here helpless, watching. He wasn't even bothering to divert any of his cruisers or droid starfighters their way, so arrogantly confident was he that he'd rendered them impotent.
So let that be his first and final mistake.
How do you want to play it, then? Anakin said, his belly jumping with nerves. He felt shock run through the officers close enough to overhear this crazy conversation, and Yularen's dismay swiftly stifled for the sake of his crew.
It's not like we can communicate with hand signals or color-coded flags.
Actually, Anakin, your task is relatively simple, said Obi-Wan. Engage the enemy and keep on shooting his ships out of the sky until none is left.
Simple?
Yeah, right.
Although being coldly dispassionate, Obi-Wan wasn't too far off the mark, come to think of it.
Fine. But what about you?
Using the fighters as cover, the clones and I will run Grievous's gauntlet and gunships, make atmospheric entry, and insert on the ground. Kothless has only two points of interest, the capital, Tal Kerah, and the Spynet facility on the city's northwest outskirts. We'll target those two areas first and see what happens once they're secured.
Obi-Wan looked at Yularen. Unless you can think of a better plan, Admiral.
Yularen shook his head.
No. We'll go with yours.
For one thing, it's uncomplicated. Barring disaster, we won't need communications once all cruisers and squadrons are reading from the same flimsy.
Besides, it's too risky asking the Lardis to tackle Grievous's droid starfighter defenses.
Anakin nodded. Spaceworthy the gunships might be, but top-of-the-line fighters they assuredly were not.
Agreed.
So, Obi-Wan, that gets you boots on the ground, and then what?
Again, that wry, dry glimmer of humor.
Oh, I'm bound to think of something. Imminent death tends to stimulate the imagination.
He turned.
Lieutenant Avery.
The comm officer looked up from her console while she was pushing the system-wide purge as hard and fast as it could take.
General?
Have you some spare data crystals? I've a few instructions for the other clone companies and the captains of Pioneer and Coruscant Sky.
sir?" she said and nodded at a slot in the comm console. "Help yourself."
"Excellent," said Obi-Wan, accepting her invitation. "Anakin, it's time you briefed Gold Squadron. I'll need you ready to launch in 15 minutes.
Obi-Wan, if you're recording orders for our other pilots, then maybe I should..."
Obi-Wan smiled tightly, his hand full of data crystals.
"Just this once, let me speak on your behalf."
Again, that ugly jump of nerves.
"Blast it. I think we really are crazy."
"Fine. Tell them to use their best judgment. Tell them to keep their eyes peeled and think of themselves as one-man squadrons. Tell them to launch on my mark. Once Gold Squadron's clear of Indomitable, Hammer Squadron launches from Pioneer, and then Arrow Squadron from the sky. After that, they're on their own. Obi-Wan."
His mentor, his friend, nodded.
"Yes, Anakin. I'll take care of your Padawan."
"Make sure you take care of yourself while you're at it," Anakin replied.
Obi-Wan just smiled. He smiled back, not even trying to muffle his feelings, then turned to leave. But Yularen raised a hand.
"I know you Jedi don't believe in it, but I wish you good luck, General Skywalker. And don't worry, calm or no calm, we'll have your backs."
"Thank you, Admiral," Anakin said, nodding.
He trusted the man, even though Yularen's reservations about the Jedi lived close to his surface.
"Good hunting to you, too."
On the way down to his pilots, Anakin took a swift detour via the clone troops barracks where Rex and Ahsoka and Torrent Company were geared up and waiting.
"Master,"
said Ahsoka, practically gasping as she and Rex answered his beckon from the opened hatch.
"What's going on? What's the..."
"Be quiet and listen," he said, quelling her with a frown. "Grievous beat us here. His invasion of Kothless is well underway, and to make things interesting, the comms are jammed. So we're going in blind. Indomitable and the other two cruisers will be escorted through the upper atmosphere by our fighters. On my signal, you'll go in on gunships. Then, while you're taking care of Grievous's ground troops, we'll mop up his warships and droid starfighters. The action's going to be hard, fast, and dirty, so stay on your toes." Ahsoka blinked at him, for once in her short life lost for words. Clasping his hands in front of him, Rex frowned.
"When you say all comms..."
"I mean all comms," he said quietly, meeting Rex's concerned gaze. "Except your troops' helmet tight beams. We hope." Rex's eyebrows lifted.
"Are the regular comms going to be restored?"
"Maybe, and there's a chance we'll be able to call for help if we need it."
How good a chance exactly?"
said Ahsoka, her blue eyes wide. Beneath her bold exterior, Anakin could feel her anxiety. He resisted the urge to put a comforting hand on her shoulder. The last thing he needed was Torrent Company thinking either of them was worried. "Good enough," he said, keeping his voice clipped and businesslike. "But that's not your concern. Follow Obi-Wan's lead and you'll all be fine."
"And what about you, sir?"
said Rex. Nothing in his attitude indicated unease, but the Force told a different story. Like Ahsoka, the experienced clone captain was deeply unsettled.
"And I don't blame him. I'm not exactly turning cartwheels myself."
"Forget about me," Anakin snapped. "I've got the easy job."
"So, if we don't have communications," Ahsoka said slowly, "how will we know when it's time to launch the ground assault?"
"Don't worry, you'll know. Now hop to it, Rex. Get your men down to the gunship hangar. Those lardies are lonely. Obi-Wan will join you there shortly, and I'll see you both when the party's over."
"Yes, sir," said Rex, nodding smartly. "Good hunting, General."
"May the Force be with you, Master,"
Ahsoka whispered.
"The Force will be with us all, Padawan," he replied.
Then he left them, before his self-control slipped and he revealed the depth of his own doubts.
Gold Squadron, with their unerring instinct for imminent trouble, was waiting for him on the hangar deck, laconic and restively ready for action. Clone Captain Fireball, his clipped hair dyed in eye-searing scarlet, a single black and scarlet scalp lock proclaiming his stubborn individuality, greeted him as he joined them.
"General!"
"Game on, Fib," he said. "With a twist, we've got no communications."
His captain's only reaction was a raised eyebrow.
"Fine, I'll take fighting over chit-chat any day."
Oh, these men, he loved them.
"It means
We're going in hot and wild. No plan but this. Blast those criffing Sept ships out of my sky. Fireball grinned with ear-to-ear ferocity.
It'll be our pleasure, General.
The rest of Gold Squadron was listening, their focused attention and absolute belief in him as warm and as reassuring as his mother's hand on his back.
Grievous is out there sitting on his clanky butt thinking he's got us whipped before we fire a single shot, he told his pilots, sharing with them his own unbridled ferocity. I'm in the mood to contradict him, boys. How about you?
They roared with one voice, clenched fists punching the air above their heads.
Forget about the comm troubles, he added. You don't need me telling you what to do. You were born knowing what to do. You've done it before, and after today, you'll do it again. Another roar, louder this time. Torrent, Cascade, and Waterfall companies are depending on us to sweep the streets for them, he finished. And we are not going to let them down. Agreed?
Agreed!
His pilot shouted, so loud this time that the hangar's metal struts and deck plating thrummed with the sound. He was so proud of them, and at the same time, so afraid. The brutal reality of combat meant the odds were they wouldn't all come home. They knew it too, but no one would read that in their faces. Faces that were, at first glance, to the uncaring observer, identical. But he knew them as individuals, and he loved them for themselves. He could list each man's scars, recite each man's quirks, describe each man's idiosyncratic hair. Close-helmeted, in full body armor, he knew every one of them by his walk. Blindfold me and I'll tell you who laughed. Letting his gaze touch each unique, committed pilot, he locked their faces tightly in his memory, in case this was the last time.
Okay, let's go, he said. On me in standard formation until we clear the ship. Once we hit free space, take care of business in your own time. Last man home buys the drinks.
Laughing and eager, the clones broke ranks and headed for their fighters. R2-D2 hooted and whistled as Anakin climbed up to their ship's cockpit.
Don't panic, R2, he told the agitated droid. Someone's working on the problem.
More anxious whistling.
No. Right now, I need you more than Lieutenant Avery does, he replied, starting his pre-flight check. So while we're kicking tinnies into the gutter out there, R2, you do your thing and I'll do mine. And if you have to tell me something, write me a note.
This time, the little astromech droid sounded dismayed.
Don't worry, we'll be fine, he insisted, even as fear shivered down his spine.
Padme, I will see her again. I'm not dying today.
Grievous hasn't found the machine yet that can touch us. Got it?
R2 beeped a mournfully hopeful reply. Good, he said, and took a quick look around the hangar to make sure Gold Squadron was locked and loaded. Yes. Every starfighter was tight and right, canopies engaged. He felt burning in the force, his pilots' united determination to prevail, to defeat the enemy no matter what was thrown their way. I am so lucky to have them. Please don't let me let them down. His own cockpit canopy he left unsecured for the moment. Waited for a messenger from the bridge to say they were go for launch.
Come on. Come on, what are we waiting for? Time means lives, people. Let's not hang around.
Obi-Wan stood by himself on the bridge, staring through Indomitable's main viewport across the airless abyss between himself and the enemy battle group, at unseen Grievous who stood on his own bridge, orchestrating helpless Kothless's subjugation. His skin was crawling with the need to act. The Separatist General's warship vomited another droid troop carrier. Sick with loathing, he watched its purposeful plummet toward the undefended planet.
Grievous.
Early in the war, he'd tried to fathom what drove the creature, what fed its hate and violence, its mindless desire for death and destruction. An answer stubbornly eluded him, and finally, he gave up. Understand Grievous or never understand him, it made no difference. There was not, could never be, a hope of peace between them.
The sentient cyborg was committed to destroying the Republic.
He was a creature of the dark side, and in joining Dooku, he'd sealed his fate. Obi-Wan could feel, trembling on the edge of his awareness, a sense of what had transpired on Kothless. If he opened himself, he'd feel it completely. The Force would show him in intimate, merciless detail, would plunge him deep inside the pain and the terror and the death that lay distant and waiting, that he and Anakin must stop. He kept himself rigorously closed. At times like this, empathy was a curse. Though most of his attention was focused beyond Indomitable's bridge, some small part of his mind was aware of every being behind him, every conversation, every half-formed thought, every bead of sweat trickling down spines, tickling ribs, and sticking hair to foreheads. This was a fine crew, one of the Republic's best, but they were organic, not programmed droids. Beneath their disciplined veneers, they were afraid. I could be afraid too, if I permitted it, but I can't. Fear is a luxury I cannot afford. Yularen joined him.
Your tight-beamed orders are received and understood, General. Give the word and we'll get this mission underway.
Give the word. Such a small, innocuous phrase. Give the word. And sign who knew how many death warrants. How many clones would die today because he gave the word? How many more would be born in their sterile containers on Kamino, subjected to accelerated maturation and comprehensive conditioning because he gave the word? He wouldn't know until the end of the engagement. If he perished during it, he might never know. If he perished during it, defending Kothless, protecting his men, would that make up for those artfully constructed lives drawing their first stunted breaths because he gave the word? Oddly. One day there will be a reckoning for this. One day we will be asked to account for these duplicate lives. One day. He felt a sudden stabbing ache behind his eyes and sighed. So, it was back. The pain was an unkind legacy from his exploits on Zagula. After all this time, not even the Jedi healer Vokara Che had managed to banish it. Neither could he, despite deep meditations and the occasional resentful surrender to chemical help. But then perhaps he deserved it. Perhaps it was a reminder of mortality, a sharp lesson in consequences. And perhaps I'm being morbidly maudlin. Enough. I've work to do. Yularen, a patient man, was waiting for him to speak. With a sideways glance, he nodded. The word is given, Admiral.
General, said Yularen and raised a hand.
It was the only sign his crew needed. As his officers prepared for battle, a junior officer sprinted for the bridge transport, heading for the starfighter flight deck. She carried with her a brief, portentous command. Gold Squadron, you have a go. And so it would start, the fighting and the dying.
Anakin, be careful.
He could feel Yularen's considering gaze.
Young Skywalker's an extraordinary pilot, General. Don't forget that.
Sympathy from Wolf Yularen? It wasn't what he'd expected. They had a cordial relationship and worked well together. But the Admiral was a reserved, cautious man who didn't, at heart, appreciate Jedi on his bridge. He was too disciplined, too professional, to allow his doubts to interfere with his duties. But they did shape his attitude. And yet here he was, offering an awkward, odd kind of comfort. Odder still, I do feel comforted. He nodded.
I know, Admiral. Indeed, he's the best we've got. But if our best isn't good enough... He wished he could see the outcome of this battle. He wished he could sense what would happen next. But even out here, so far from Coruscant and the Outer Rim sieges, the dark side smothered his feeling for the future, torqued and twisted the light side, rendering it opaque. He was so much more sensitive to it now.
Another legacy of Zagula. Which he supposed was a good thing, even though it made him feel ill. He felt a constant hum of nausea, malignantly whispering. In silence, they waited. Two very different men, twinned by a single purpose. Their differences set aside to serve the greater good. And then, a sharpening of the Force, a leaping in his blood. The light side dazzled, beating back the dark, Beside him, Yularen released a reverent sigh as he stared through the bridge's transparasteel window on the galaxy.
They stop my heart, you know, the Admiral said softly, surprisingly. Every time I see them, they stop my heart.
Sleek and lethal, beautiful in their killing way, Gold Squadron starfighters speared through the void beyond the viewport. Obi-Wan, reluctantly agreeing with Yularen's unexpected sentiment, felt his own heart thud as he kept his force-enhanced gaze on the lead fighter, on Anakin, tearing toward Grievous at the head of his pack. He could feel his former Padawan's exhilaration in the flying, his fierce joy at the thought of crushing this impudent, implacable enemy. That fierce joy chilled him. Somewhere, somehow, Anakin had discovered not a taste for killing, no, never that, but certainly a taste for vengeance. He'd learned to find pleasure in making an enemy pay for his crimes.
And did he learn it from me? In my thirst for justice and the pleasure I take in perfecting my skills, have I led him astray?
The thought was a torment. Not all those who fought for the Separatists were droids. That he might, unwittingly, have failed his brilliant apprentice, be blind to something in him so crucial, so vital.
I don't care what Yoda says. He was knighted too soon, and I fear we've yet to pay the price for our haste.
Movement to starboard caught his distracted attention. Hammer Squadron, fleeing the safety of Pioneer's hangars, was following Gold Squadron to tangle with Grievous's droid starfighters. Moments later, to port, Arrow Squadron surged out of Coruscant sky. Three full complements of fighters, the pilot of each metal canister a thin skin's distance from death. Yularen gave his con officer the nod, then turned.
General, we'll be in assault position shortly.
Indomitable was underway, ponderously heading for Kothless, flanked by her sister cruisers, and trusting to Anakin and his fearless pilots that they wouldn't come to grief before they could defend themselves. Some of Grievous's droid starfighters had broken off their prowling perimeter patrol of his battle group and were heading for the first wave of Republic starfighters, heading for Anakin recklessly in the lead.
Thank you, Admiral.
Streams of laser fire, blinking bright, crisscrossed the dark of space. Jinking and swooping, rolling and evading, Anakin and his clone pilots dodged destruction by a finger's width. Four droid starfighters exploded in durasteel splinters and shards and slag.
General, Yularen was frowning, when do you anticipate launching the gunships?
Obi-Wan couldn't take his eyes off Gold Squadron, off Anakin.
I don't know yet. As soon as I do, I'll tell you.
Yularen cleared his throat.
That's a little vague for my liking.
Really, Admiral?
Obi-Wan made himself look at Yularen and smile with quiet confidence. Through the Force, he heard a clone pilot scream.
I don't find it vague at all.
Stang! Anakin cursed, and scraped under the rolling belly of a shattered droid ship.
Careful, Gold Seven, watch where you're shooting!
It didn't matter that Flashpoint couldn't hear him. Yelling helped, so he yelled. Grievous's modified vulture starfighters were swarming them like enraged wasps. Best he could count, his people were outnumbered close on 2-1.
But we faced worse odds. We can do this. We can get the job done.
He'd made 6 kills in 4 minutes. A Republic fighter streamed past his line of sight, hotly pursued by a pair of enemy ships.
Look out, Arrow 9, you've got two on your...
The vultures fired, lethally accurate, and Arrow 9's fighter disintegrated into fire and smoke. Punched through the Force, he felt Stinger's fury, his brief, intense pain.
No, no.
The clone pilot's death echoed through him, blinding. And then there wasn't time to feel anything, because 3 droid ships were on him.
Where did they come from?
And he was fighting to escape them, fighting his own whipping speed and trajectory while they kept him pinned among them.
Stang, they were good. Who programmed these barbs? I want to meet him in a dark Coruscant alley.
And suddenly, flying a fighter in combat wasn't so much fun anymore. Fireball saved him. Screaming out of a turn that should have been too tight for his fighter's structural tolerance, feeling like he was holding the ship together with the Force and desperation, flying through the vulture debris Fireball left in his wake, Anakin caught a glimpse of Indomitable from the corner of his eye. Laser fire streamed from the cruiser's gun turrets, welcome annihilation of Grievous's advantage. Flicking his gaze farther around, he saw that Pioneer and Coruscant Sky were pounding the Separatist warships as they headed for Kothless's meager asteroid belt, diverting Grievous's resources from the desperately battling fighter squadrons. And then, Fireball dropped beside him so they were flying tandem just for a moment. Turning his head, looking past smoke-scorched R2-D2, Anakin raised an acknowledging hand, thumb up-tilted. Fireball's teeth flashed in a swift smile, and then he was peeling away to chase another droid starfighter. Anakin shook himself. Good idea. You're not a tourist, Skywalker. Hammer 2 shot past his fighter's nose, a silent shout of panic blistering through the force. Smoke belched from Wingnut's sublight drive, and his cockpit canopy was bubbled in a wide streak, obscuring line of sight. Two droid starfighters pursued him, lethal projectiles spewing equally lethal plasma. Wingnut's fighter was struggling, pitching, its starboard stabilizer shot, his R4 unit a smoking ruin, and the droids were gaining. No, no, not Wingnut. He only joined us a month ago. Grimly determined, he plunged his own fighter into the vulture's path, throwing the machine into a tight spin, hammering its laser controls so his weapon spewed death in a wildly expanding arc. The incendiary plasma sliced the droid starfighters to ragged, spinning pieces. One chunk grazed R2 on its way past, and the cockpit datapad lit up with a hysterical protest. Sorry, he shouted through the spark-singed canopy. My mistake! Wrenching the controls, he flipped his fighter right side up again, or what counted as right side up in this crazy fight, and tried to find Wingnut. There he was, limping back to Pioneer. Hammer 8 was covering him, keeping the tinnies off his smoking tail. Stang, stang, speaking of tinnies. His cockpit sensors screamed a warning, four of the enemy heading right for him. Where were they coming from? Every time he killed one, three more popped up in its place. Grievous was throwing every last tinny he could lay his metal hands on at the Jedi cruisers and the fighters protecting them. Space and time blurred, and the void filled with explosions and shards and narrow misses and voices in the Force. His pilots, laughing and swearing and howling to their deaths. He laughed and swore and howled along with them, the silence unbearable. Kill. Kill, and kill again. Slaughter the starfighters, slaughter the Tuskens. Every loss is the same loss. Every pain springs from one source. Save Kothless, save Coruscant, save Padme. Save them all. Chapter 3. Sunk deep within the Force, subordinating what his eyes could see to what his senses told him, Obi-Wan watched Anakin and his pilots savage Grievous's fleet, and watched the droid starfighters savage them in return. Someone on the Separatist side had clearly tinkered with the Vulture's operating systems. There was no droid control ship in Grievous's battle group, yet the enemy fighters were functioning with fluid efficiency. Wonderful. Just what we need. Something else mechanical to distract Anakin from the larger picture. Observing from outside himself, peculiarly detached within the Force's ebb and flow, he watched the three Leviathan Republic warships add their might to the fray, weapons cleaving through enemy fighters and debris alike. And as he watched the furious battle, at once set apart from it and deeply involved, he felt clone pilots die, felt Anakin's rage and grief for them, felt his own grief muted, felt a faint echo of Ahsoka still young and perfecting her mastery of the light side's strength, attempting to follow Anakin's progress from their gunship on Indomitable's hangar deck. Participant and witness, he stood before the bridge's viewport, waiting for the signal he knew would come. Not yet. Not yet. Not yet. Yes, now. He saw Gold Squadron worry fleeing droid starfighters to pieces, saw Hammer and Arrow Squadron set their sights on Grievous himself, felt Anakin's drenching relief, heard his calm voice, clear as a shout. Go, Obi-Wan. Tell Yularen it's now or never. He turned. That's a go, Admiral. Maximum sublight. Get us down to that planet. Done, said Yularen, his deep voice ripe with a violent satisfaction, and his eyes just a little wide with the reminder of Jedi powers. Captain! Behind them, needing no further prompting, the con officer leapt to his duty. A heartbeat later, Indomitable shuddered, her sublight engines powering them toward Kothless and the beings trapped planetside who were desperate for their help. Obi-Wan stepped back from the bridge viewport. It was time for him to join Ahsoka, Rex, and Torrent Company.
Good hunting, General, said Yularen, his eyes fierce, his face grim. You'll hear from me as soon as communications are restored.
If they were restored. Lieutenant Avery was even now buried deep in Indomitable's innards, attempting to graft into them those antiquated anodes. May the Force be with her. With a nod to Yularen, he made his measured way to the gunship hangar. Even cocooned within the cruiser, he could feel the dull thudding of her massive laser cannons as they pounded Grievous's new flagship and the smaller warships in his fleet. Through the Force, he could feel the wrath of Pioneer and Coruscant Sky, the cruiser's sister ships, lending their voices to the chorus of destruction raining down upon the enemy.
You should have stayed at home, Grievous. Coming here was a mistake.
The transport opened, and there was Ahsoka, hanging out of their open gunship, her eyes enormous with impatient eagerness. He jogged across the crowded hangar deck, threading through the other waiting clone-laden gunships, and leapt up beside her. Sparing Anakin's apprentice a small, brief smile, he looked to Rex. Soup's on, Captain.
Sir, said Rex, and reached into the cockpit to tap their helmeted pilot on the shoulder.
The pilot smacked two console switches, and the interior lights came up to full. A second later, the exterior shielding thumped into place. In the gunship's belly, crowded shoulder to shoulder, as many Torrent Company clones as would fit in the troop compartment slammed their buckets on their heads, becoming eerily alien.
Master Kenobi? Said Ahsoka, quiveringly hopeful. Is Sky Guy...
He's fine, Padawan, he snapped. Focus. Discipline your mind in preparation for battle.
Yes, Master, she whispered. I do know that. I'm sorry.
She was a good child. Anakin was training her well.
Better, perhaps, than I trained him. At least in some ways. He hasn't forgotten what it's like to be young and uncertain.
Don't apologize. Making mistakes is a large part of being a Padawan. It's how we deal with making mistakes that determines our progress and our ultimate success or failure. Ahsoka's eyes were almost comically wide.
I can't imagine you making mistakes, Master Kenobi.
Despite his own simmering tension, he came close to laughing. Padawan, in my time I have made more mistakes than there are sand fleas on a wild bat. A triple flash of red lights reflected on faces and flat surfaces as the hangar's launch beacon lit up in warning. Not needing to be told, the pilots fired up their engines. The throaty roar was echoed by the gunships on either side of them.
Better hang on, General, said Rex. That soup you mentioned has started to boil.
With a nod to Ahsoka, he grabbed his own helmet and vanished inside it.
Indeed, said Obi-Wan, snatching hold of a ceiling strap.
Rex's terse words tautened the gunship's atmosphere to the breaking point. The silence beneath all the normal operational noises was absolute, uncanny. Every clone stood with unnerving stillness, head tipped fractionally to one side. They were unified in a private conversation, attention trained on their captain.
Last-minute instructions, a rallying pep talk, some kind of clone prayer?
Obi-Wan didn't know. He'd never asked. The idea of asking felt intrusive, insensitive, impolite.
Weird, isn't it?
Ahsoka whispered confidingly.
I'm used to it now, but I'm kind of not, too.
He gave her a half-smile.
I know what you mean.
The hangar doors were fully open, their exterior shields still engaged. Staring over the pilot's shoulder and out through the cockpit viewport, he could see they were close to their target, Kothless. Just the asteroid belt left to negotiate, and then the steep plunge through the planet's thin upper atmosphere. Indomitable shouldered her way between the suspended chunks of rock, blasting some aside, taking the path of least resistance where she could by using the route carved out by Grievous's droid troop carriers. At least the Separatist leader was proving useful for something. Closing his eyes, Obi-Wan sought for Anakin and the Force. He was there, still in one piece, leading his surviving pilots in a ruthless chivying of Grievous's warships and droid starfighters, drawing their fire away from the Jedi cruisers, giving them the best possible chance of reaching the planet unscathed. Satisfied that Anakin was, and would be, all right, at least for the time being, he turned his senses to Kothless. What he felt, so close now, tightened his throat and his belly, and flared the banked fires of pain behind his eyes to bright, angry life. Terror, agony, bewilderment, despair. Breathing harshly, he turned aside and saw that Ahsoka was struggling to contain her own undisciplined reaction to the overwhelming sensations and emotions boiling through the Force. As Indomitable plowed through the planet's upper atmosphere, the heat of re-entry burning all around them, he took the child by one scrawny shoulder. "You've opened yourself too wide, Ahsoka," he said, shaking her gently. "You've let yourself be overcome. You're not a river in flood, youngling. You're a faucet. Tighten your mind. Restrict the Force's flow. Control the amount and the speed of what you're seeing and feeling. You must never let it control you. That way lies madness and a fall to the dark side." The girl was trembling, her eyes squeezed tight shut, so distressed she didn't even bristle at his deliberate use of youngling instead of Padawan. In the gunship's dull illumination, he thought he saw a tear escape between her extravagant lashes and trickle down her cheek.
"I can't, Master, I can't."
"Yes, you can," he insisted. "You've great potential, Ahsoka. Master Yoda has high hopes for you, as does Anakin. Control yourself."
"Yes, yes,"
said Ahsoka, and opened her eyes. In her face, a new and formidable determination.
"You're right, Master Kenobi. I can."
Obi-Wan felt a surge in the Force as she exerted control. Ahsoka exhaled one long breath as she regained her emotional balance. Impressed, Obi-Wan released her. "Well done, Padawan."
"General Kenobi," their pilot said over his shoulder. "Hangar shields are disengaged."
"Then let's go, Lieutenant," Obi-Wan replied. "We've kept the people of Kothless waiting long enough."
The gunships launched in swift succession, bursting free of the Republic cruisers like act dogs slipped from their leashes. Watching ship after ship dive toward the stricken planet's surface, Anakin allowed himself one brief, distracted thought. "May the Force be with you, Obi-Wan." And then banished the ground assault troops from his mind entirely. Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Rex's men had their battle to win, and he had his. Worrying about them now would easily get him or his own people killed. The cockpit console datapad lit up with a new message from R2-D2. Still no comms. Comms not active.
I know, he muttered. "Believe me, I've noticed. Come on, Avery, what's taking you so long?"
"Hang in there, R2. We're doing all right without them.
So far."
A partially damaged droid starfighter attempted to lock onto him. Braking hard, flipping end over end, he blew it to pieces, then took a moment for a quick head count. 23 starships, excluding himself. With Wingnut back on board Pioneer, that meant
12. I've lost 12.
There was no time to feel it. New droid starfighters were pouring out of the SEP warships. What, they've got an onboard foundry now? Heading in a direct line for Kothless, the cruisers and all those clone-laden gunships. Scarab fighters this time, configured to kill just as easily in atmosphere as airless space.
"So, you've run out of vultures, Grievous? Does that mean we killed them all? Hey, sorry about that."
Another glance showed him the last of the gunships plunging out of sight. Showed him Grievous's scarab swarming after it, bent on destruction. He turned his fighter sharply to port and executed a tight barrel roll to get Fireball's attention. The captain's gloved hand waved, acknowledging, so he flipped himself under a raggedly floating debris field and waggled his tail at a cluster of his people on its far side. Message received. His men formed up behind him. A hunting pack they were now, scenting fresh blood and eager for the kill. Soaked in the Force, his blood scalding with adrenaline, he set his sights on the scarabs, opened his fighter's throttle to maximum velocity, and attacked.
"You're dead. You're dead. Every last one of you is dead."
the battle consumed him. The void of space fell away. Flesh became metal. Thought burst into flame. The boundaries between space and time and self disappeared. Dissolved within the Force, he surrendered to the moment. Past, present, and future were one. He was Anakin. He was Obi-Wan. He was Shmi and Padme and Ahsoka. He was Grievous in his greed. He was Rex and Fireball and Wingnut and all the clones he'd never met. Every friend, every enemy, left behind and yet to come. And he was his fighter, too. Wings and thrusters and conduits and canopy. He was his fighter, tearing up the stars. I am the Chosen One. Today, I choose to win. Indomitable, Pioneer, and Coruscant Sky joined him in battle. Like the warships of old, planet-bound, on wide seas, they sailed the void's astral winds and pounded the Sep warships with proton torpedoes and laser blasts. Fire bloomed and died on both sides, its incandescence fleeting. The pilots of Gold Squadron, his hammers and his arrows, flung themselves at the enemy so the enemy would not prevail. Sight, chase, kill. Sight, chase, kill. Over and over and over, and Arrow 6 gone. Hammer Leader gone. Gold 4 gone. Arrow 3 gone. It's war. It's what happens. Don't think of them. Not now. Scarab gone. Scarab gone.